So Mike says it's the rare local hour where we can talk about all the teams. We've got all the teams.
Wow.
All the local teams are in play today and relevant. The University of Miami squeaks one out against Virginia Tech. That's a game they've lost a lot over the last 20 years.
I get the Canes, the Dolphins. I'm just struggling to figure out how we're going to weave the Marlins and the Panthers into the local hour.
And the Heat as well. Chris, do you want to weave it all together as our local aficionado?
I mean, I feel like the Marlins did one of the most historical things ever done in sports. And Stugatz is like, what did the Marlins do?
And let's wait. Let's just sit here and let's see if he can figure out what it is, because Stugatz.
Well, I know they hired the first female, in charge of baseball operations, which is a great move by Derek Jeter and the Marlins. So I asked the question and it was answered. Good job out of Chris.
Her name is Kim Ang, and I will be curious to see how that ends up playing out, because we've got a couple of very diverse front offices now. Football, I mean, the Dolphins have about the blackest front office in the league. And now I'm going to assume, and I don't know if this is fair to Kim Ang or not, because she's credentialed and she has the resume to be worthy of that position. But I assumed when they got rid of Mike Hill that Derek Jeter was just going to largely take over, that it was going to be Derek Jeter's got the veto call on everything. And so whoever gets installed, no matter what, white, Asian, woman, black, they're going to be answering to Derek Jeter on the smallest of minutia. But that's not reported. I'm not reporting that out. I just assume it. What did you think of that, Chris?
I mean,
Good. Good thoughts on that. I appreciate you giving us all your thoughts in a way that was concise and strong.
I also thought that Derek Jeter sensed an opportunity here for him not only to be part owner of a baseball team, but a guy who puts the baseball team together. So I thought he would have a more active role. Maybe he still will, but I just figured he would be the guy who ran the team.
This is someone he's worked with before in New York, and so he knows what the working relationship is.
She's very credentialed. I don't know much about the relationship with Derek Jeter, but given her time with the Yankees and her time, I believe, with the Dodgers, she seems to work well with Don Mattingly and Derek Jeter. I only know Derek Jeter's business operations from what I hear from David Sampson, which is obviously skewed. I say that as a bit of a warning on the front end. But he suggested that Derek Jeter really isn't of the school of mind to give up power. Whatever move he would make in that front office would either increase his power or keep it where it is right now, presently with Mike Hill, and he was still very powerful and influential there. So still maybe a final say situation.
Universally
but we'll talk about
applauded move, though. Like, no, you will not hear that. You won't find a criticism of what it is they did.
I'm with you, though. I think Jeter, late in the Marlins season last year, was hearing a little too much Michael Hill being referenced on MLB Network and was like, you know what? This needs to be the Derek Jeter show.
That would have been good about 3 minutes ago.
It wouldn't have been actually good enough, but it would have been better than what he produced, which is a lot of surprised hemming and hawing and uselessness.
There's some landmines there.
What are the landmines?
No, I was just distracted by things going on in the home front, and then you went to me. I wasn't expecting you to go to me, and I was just like, oh, God, what did he just say?
It's very early in the proceedings. I understand that. Like, I get it. But, Chris, you got to be on your toes here. You never know when Dan's going to go to you. We're in the local hour, too. I mean, you just got to be on your toes, man.
Billy,
and speak.
Billy, what did you think of what the Marlins did there historically?
It was a good move, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I didn't really know of Kim Ang before this, and I don't think I'm alone in saying that. But, you know, they got rid of their president of baseball operations, who they inherited. They have a plan that they've been rolling out the past couple years. And this seems to be the last piece that was missing in terms of their decision making. And, you know, you see her resume. She's been in baseball for 30 plus years. She's had all kinds of roles, assistant general manager. I think she was the vice president of baseball operations for Major League Baseball. She has a relationship with Jeter and the Yankees. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, they rebuilt the farm system. This is just the final piece, I guess, for them to have their fingerprints on everything. So we'll see how it works. I mean, hopefully next year isn't kind of like a fallback year, because they made the playoffs this year. So there's expectations there. I think there's expectations there.
I'd be careful with that, Billy. I'd be careful with that. I really would.
Why?
In terms of what?
Just because you think of playoff teams and it was a totally mutated season.
Well, that's
season,
what I'm saying. Like, I'm saying for her, this is a dangerous position because there could be people that have expectations there, but it was a 60-game season where they finished, I think, two games over 500, and they went one – well, they made it to the second round of the playoffs. So, you know, you would think things will kind of get back to where they were. Yes, last year was ahead of, I think, schedule in terms of where they were going to end up. So – I don't know that they're going to repeat the success that they had last year, and I'm hoping that this won't be something that they'll be like, well, you know, we took a step back. I doubt that it will. I doubt that they will be that short-sighted when it seems like they're rebuilding and just say one season will be, you know, on the GM. So I don't know. I guess we'll see how it plays out, but I mean, it's exciting. I mean, the organization's headed in a new direction. We'll
Billy,
see.
I think that's a good point, the expectations. So, because you're the perfect person to ask, do you have expectations? Because the job's a lot easier for her at the start when there are no expectations.
Oh, no. I mean, I don't have expectations next year in terms of, oh, we need to keep moving forward and it's NLCS or bust. Like, I don't think most people that have been following the team would say they're ready to be one of the two best teams in the National League. So I think it's a good spot for her. I mean, there are nationally, there's no expectations, right? And I think locally, there's not a ton of expectations either. So there's only positive, I think, in terms of the way her work can be perceived.
I think when you have the two starting pitchers at the top of the rotation, that there are expectations that the Marlins will compete for a playoff spot. I don't think that they need to win the division or be one of the best teams in baseball. But if the Marlins are not good next season, I think that will be a disappointment. I think they've at least raised the expectations to you need to be in the hunt for a playoff spot later.
Man, you guys, that is tough what you guys are doing to this baseball team where you're expecting them to be above average when in 60 games this year, they were fortunate to be above average given when you look at how much they were being outscored by. They could have been – the bottom half of that division, Philadelphia and Washington and the Mets, all had, didn't they have either better run differentials or the same? And all of them had catastrophic seasons. The three of them had catastrophic seasons. I know that it's not totally right to do run differential on 60 games because the place to do that is 162 games. I just thought that they were an average team that caught some breaks last year.
Marlins were minus 41, the Phillies were minus 5, Mets minus 22, and the Nationals, who were dreadful, were minus 8.
I mean, they lost 18 players. I wouldn't exactly say they caught breaks and they were a lucky team last season.
Also, they lost two games to the Braves by like 40 runs combined.
Okay, so you guys expect them to be above average and competing for a playoff spot next year.
I just think they need to compete. Like, I think we're kind of like, you know, semantics here. Like, I'm not like, I just think they need to not be terrible. And I don't think you're saying that they're going to be terrible. So I feel like we kind of agree.
Well, hold on a second. In a 60-game season, Dan, for the most part, the teams that were expected to be good in a regular long season, okay, were good. Even in a 60-game season, it got down to the Dodgers, the Rays, the Yankees, all the teams that a lot of people thought were going to be very good.
But those teams are a good deal better than the Marlins.
A little bit better.
Those teams are all a good bit better than the Marlins.
I think we agree, though. We're previewing a season, and we'll see how it shakes out. It seemed as though the Marlins were good last year. We all have our skepticisms entering this season, but let's talk about an actual good team.
A bit of an upset here that we'd spent this much time on the Marlins when it does appear. You guys tell me if you think I have this right as it relates to the Dolphins, because they are an above-average football team. They're a good football team.
The Super Bowl?
No, I would not put them in the Super Bowl, but this is what I would do because I think this part is fair. You saw with that Buffalo-Arizona game. I think if I tell you Buffalo, Arizona, the Dolphins, what's the difference? You kind of shrug your shoulders. You saw the last 2 weeks. You're like, a play here or there. I think there's the second tier in the AFC underneath Pittsburgh and Kansas City. You've got all of these teams, all of them, Baltimore, Buffalo, Miami, Indianapolis, the Titans, the Raiders, maybe Cleveland. You've got all of them second tier. They're clearly below Pittsburgh and Kansas City. Any one of them could beat the other, and any one of them on the right day could catch Pittsburgh or Kansas City in a playoff game and surprise them. But that's a lot of teams, man. You're basically hoping that you are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's 9 teams that are legitimately playoff good. Two at the very top and then another tier below them that everyone feels the same.
The NFL playoff picture is wild. And I say this as a Browns fan who's looking at this graphic for the first time in mid-November since Brian Hoyer was my quarterback. I thought with an expansion of the playoffs, you would see more of these like terrible Arizona, Carolina, Houston Texans like playoff games. But at least for this first year, this experiment, it doesn't really seem like it's going to be diluted outside of the NFC East. They're all pretty good teams that are going to be making the playoffs, and you can make an argument for one of them catching the top-tier teams on the right day.
There are enough good teams in the AFC especially, you're right, because the NFC East has to be thrown in there. There are just, damn, there are so many good teams in the AFC. It's ridiculous.
But the headlining story is Miami appears to be one of those good teams. Their defense, their special teams, every week I go into it like, let's see what they ask of Tua, and they don't ask much of the player, and when they do, he delivers.
Van Ginkel.
That Van Ginkel is making plays every
Van
week.
Van Ginkel.
Oh, he's great. I love it.
I keep saying it's not sustainable to get scores from the other two phases of the game, but every week they prove me wrong. They've been tremendous.
I believe that I could corner Stugatz in a total bit of fraudulent. Van Ginkel has been great. How, Stugatz? I see you furiously. Oh, you're going to read it?
He's a great kicker.
You have no idea what we're talking about.
I just wanted to be part of the conversation and lend you guys a little cheer. I have no idea where Van Ginkel. You think I'm happy with these Dolphin developments? Let me tell you, I am not. Okay? They're going to be good. They're going to be good for the next decade and a half, and I'm sitting here at 0-9. So you think I'm thrilled with these developments, and I'm not, okay?
I don't think you're thrilled.
This is
disaster. Don't pretend like you know what we're talking about.
We said
Van Ginkel, and what you said is who? And then you said, he's been great.
Then you said he was a kicker.
Support.
When their kicker is actually pretty good, too.
Jason Sanders.
Dude, the corners on this team, those are really good wide receivers that they just pretty much shut down outside of a garbage time touchdown to Keenan Allen.
Mike, DeAndre Hopkins. They slowed DeAndre Hopkins last week. Like, those defensive backs are legitimate best in the league kind of tandem.
Yeah, that's an elite unit.
Best since Madison and Sertan.
Yeah, an elite unit there for the Miami Dolphins, and we touched on it last week. But Xavien Howard clearly wasn't himself. He was dealing with off-field stuff and injuries. He's bounced back in a big way, and now both those corners are worth the money. Tremendous defense.
Miami's probably thinking, Miami fans, if you haven't been watching the Chargers, what's the big deal about Herbert? Like, they haven't looked like that this season. Like, Keenan Allen's not someone you can stop. Mike Williams is always making plays all over the field. Like, what they did yesterday was impressive. And I didn't understand the point spread because the nation is still not believing in this team. The Chargers were only a 1.5-point dog. Like, people are not yet believing that the Dolphins are actually good.
I'm not betting against the Dolphins anymore. They've handed me my ass three consecutive weeks. I keep thinking, like, okay, Tua's maybe got them fooled. But Tua's also, like, he stepped up against Kyler Murray. You saw how special Kyler Murray was yesterday. You can make an argument he outplayed Kyler Murray in that game against Arizona. This is something special that is building here because everyone was positioning Miami as if they nail this quarterback draft selection, they're setting up to be a dynastic team. The Texans once again lose. They have that Texans pick. Now you have faith in your defense and the culture that they're building because every time we've been doing radio in this town, they've had a tire fire in that front office. They seem as though they're finally getting it right.
Broncos, Jets, Bengals, next three games. Here's the other thing. The GM and the coach, they all have to be applauded here because they are set up for the next. They really are. For a decade run here, because they have those picks, they have the Texans pick, I think they have the quarterback, and they'll have something as valuable as anything in the NFL right now if they have one of those first two picks. They'll have the rights to Fields or Lawrence. I mean, it's crazy.
Yesterday was a great day for the Dolphins just because Buffalo got knocked back down at the end, and as Mike said, Houston ends up losing, and you have those draft picks from what Bill O'Brien did to that franchise, which basically is just a skid mark on his underwear.
We saw the accuracy from Tua in the first few games, but yesterday we saw the composure from Tua. There were a few plays. There was a few bad snaps in a shotgun where all of a sudden the pocket's swarming in on him and he just is calm and knows where to go for the safe throw. A couple times he turned what would be a sack into like a 3-yard run because of his elusiveness. I'm sold now. I've been kind of waiting back on this. We've had Tua in the chamber. Tua is now out of the chamber and I'm going to just start calling him Ace. Accuracy, composure, elusiveness. A-C-E. Wow. Ace.
Ace. That's very efficient there. You're calling him Ace. You're very excited about that. What he is doing that Burrow and Herbert are not is winning.
It helps. It does help that he has had a 7-0 lead before he's touched the ball in all three games.
Van Ginkle, their kicker, as Stugatz likes to call him.
He's got a boot.
I want to spend more and more time just pointing out Stugatz's fraudulence. I know it's been the epicenter of everything we do here, but I very often think, like, did you go somewhere this weekend? Because you come in here and you're phlegmy and you're coughing things up in the studio.
Yeah, he provided a negative test. He did go somewhere.
I sound great. What are you talking? I mean, I yelled at a lacrosse coach and at my team, and I was very adamant. My team needed me. Dan, listen, I go by feel. Sometimes I don't have to say anything, and sometimes my team needs a little kick in the rear end, if you know what I need. If you know what I mean. And they got one this week. I mean, I feel fine. I feel great. I'm excited. I'm depressed. Because I'm a Jet fan, but other than that, I feel great. I mean,
it's not on air that you sound bad. It's the amount of hacking that you're doing. We're in a very confined space. You close the door behind you. This is an airborne virus. You go out and you fly around and you get on tubes filled with disease, and then you come back in here and you're talking very loud, and you also clear your throat without the mask being on. So you're doing a lot of like,
back-to-back negatives, Dan. Last time you got tested for COVID. Listen, if someone gets COVID around here, it ain't my fault. Back-to-back negatives, too, in 7 days. How about that?
I kind of feel like you should get one 4 days from now because you don't get it immediately.
Well, good news. I'm going away again. I'll have to get another one.
I want to talk about some gambling stuff that happened yesterday. Billy, did you have anything you wanted to give us on the Dolphins and Tua? Did you have any opinions as you soaked that up? Did Tua spend the entire game rubbing his nipples? What was happening there on the sidelines?
I love that, Jeff.
What he did yesterday, Dan? He passed the eye test. We said yesterday was the eye test game. Herbert, Tua, who's going to pass the eye test? They both had previously passed the sniff test. Yesterday was the eye test, and I think we all know who won the eye test yesterday.
Yep, we do, and that means the Dolphins won the draft, by the way. I mean, how about that?
Also, who's this Ahmed guy? Because that running back was shifty.
I love the idea that the Dolphins are clubbing people with Van Ginkle and Ahmed.
And they had to deal with COVID entering this game. They caught a break because it looked like Bosa was going to be healthy entering that game. He ends up not playing, but week in and week out, I keep looking for holes to poke into the Miami Dolphins just because I'm kind of a hater. That's not my team locally, and Dolphin fans annoy me. They're talking their shit on Twitter, and they should. They got a good team.
Their skill guys are not excellent, but Devontae Parker has grown and is doing some of the things that you expect from a number one receiver.
You would imagine, right, with these draft picks, they don't need the quarterback. We know that. So they have Houston's number one and number two, plus their own number one and number two. You would imagine that would be used to surround Tua with the right players,
I hope
right?
so, right? Because I am so very tired of watching the Dolphins, you know, give all the money to Ndamukong Suh or draft offensive lineman after offensive lineman and tell us, going back to Keith Sims and Richmond Webb, how important the offensive line is. Like, all I want to see from them is something that I haven't seen from them in 20 years, which is give me guys who can break a game open. Like, give me a bunch of guys who are, you know, just like Lamb, for example, or not DK Metcalf, but just give me somebody out there, because Devontae Parker has been largely disappointing, Stugatz. He's come along in the last like 18 games or so, but he's been largely disappointing and hurt.
If you can arrive at a place where Devontae is your number two wide receiver, you're in good shape. He's not Julio Jones. He's not going to be that type of guy. He's good. He's not great. If he can be your number two, then you're really on to something.
This is going to be a weird draft, just like with the NBA draft, because there's a lot of prospects that were going off of 2 years ago tape, but the real impact receivers, I think Waddle for Alabama suffered an injury. Chase was dealing with all sorts of COVID stuff, and LSU is not very good, so they're not on our radar, but there are impact receivers here, but you're just going to have to go on 2 years ago, kind of like with Greg Rousseau in Miami.
I'd love someone like Jefferson. I would love like something like that that gets you all excited. It doesn't have to be Julio Jones. It could just be somebody who's a clear number one.
Remember before the draft when Dolphins fans wanted Tom Brady on this team? They didn't want Tua. They wanted Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Oh, did we say that? We didn't say that. We don't know.
Would have been fun, though. I mean, I think stopgap. You know?
I think you said that, Chris. I think you were... Okay, very well.
Oh, man. Imagine, though, Dan, if they had Brady and Tua. Two-headed monster.
Yeah.
Tua-headed monster.
Tua-headed. That means they have Antonio Brown and Gronk as well. I mean,
wow.
I know.
Stugatz, did you see the two gambling things that happened yesterday that were breathtaking, depending on which side you were on?
Well, I saw the Nick Chubb one, obviously. Did he buy up a half point? What happened there? And are you talking about the end of the Cardinals game?
Yeah, yes. those were two impactful gambling finishes.
2.5 points. I had the cards.
Well, thank God for Cliff Kingsbury not running that 2-point conversion.
No, but I was mad at him by the half point.
Yeah, well, we had the Bills. We were about to suffer two bad Mina beats because we also had Chubb. But let's say on the local kick, that's more national, Dan, because we can talk about a lot. We got the NBA draft. It's Woj notification season. The Miami Heat are involved in talks potentially with Danilo Gallinari, but you kind of miss your shot here. But can I talk about the Miami Hurricanes real quick? Because I'm very critical of the Miami Hurricanes this season. I haven't, you know me, I've been screaming fire Manny Diaz since he lost to Georgia Tech last year. Not impressed, but I do want to give him credit. Now, they got punished by the AP, but that stuff will work itself out. I can make an argument, hey, this is not fair. You're raising Wisconsin. They played two games, and they beat Michigan. What are you doing? I think Miami is right around where they should be. It's just grading off of years past. It doesn't really make sense how Miami is slipping when they're winning straight up on the road, missing 13 players as a two-point dog. But I want to give credit to Manny Diaz because last year, look, you don't have to dig around too much to find out what Jaren Williams was doing before that FIU game. There was a culture problem with Miami. There were very identifiable needs that jumped off the TV that Miami had to fix. Kicker, the year before punter, quarterback, obviously. Manny Diaz has fixed every single one of them. The Miami Hurricanes play hard at the end of games. They're not doing the... You could always say about a Manny Diaz defense, well, they're a good defense, but when you need a stop, they're not getting it. But now they know that they have a quarterback that's going to go out there and win the game. They're not deflated by how immature the quarterback is on the other side, and they're making plays. That was very impressive what they did at Virginia Tech. Missing 13 players, the rotation guys on the defensive line against a dual-threat quarterback, you have guys like Phillips and Roche basically playing every down, and they're getting stronger as the game goes on. Roche had a really difficult matchup against one of the best left tackles in the nation. That's a good win for the Miami Hurricanes. It's a game they always lose.
Virginia Tech did lose to Liberty, which is somehow good this year. Miami, this part was impressive. I mean, Diaz said after the game they were on the brink of not even playing because they lost so many guys and the protocols were weakening them. It's why Miami was an underdog. You say they have fixed everything, and you did hit the signature spots that they fixed. But what I noticed in that game is they're not going to be able to block anybody. They did not fix that offensive line.
Well, they were missing Jachai Clark also because of COVID and contact tracing. It's not exactly fair to say everyone tested positive for COVID. They're in a hot spot. They probably all tested positive over the summer, if I want to get reckless. But there's contact tracing protocols in the ACC too, which, again, credit to Manny Diaz, because we've seen numerous programs, even programs in the Big Ten and Pac-12, that had additional time to get their protocols in line. Miami's fielded a competitive team every time out. They haven't canceled the game in one of the hottest spots in the country. They've dealt with the look, they're not sexy. When Harrison Hunt is out and McLeod is out, you're not really pointing.
Their
when
quarterback
Clark is out.
Sexy, Mike. Their quarterback is like, he is absolutely Heisman worthy.
Oh, yeah. I'm really worried about what happens to Miami if De'Aaron King decides to leave, because he is a senior. He does get an additional year of eligibility, but we may come crashing down to earth and realize exactly how far we are again. Week one against Alabama.
Sexy when he's not playing Clemson. Fair.
Does anybody look cooler wearing a mask than Manny Diaz?
No.
He's got that going for him. Do we agree on that? He just rocks it well.
You don't think Jim Harbaugh? No.
It's hard to take him seriously and think he's cool right now. You know
what happened? You wanted him to coach every team. You thought Jim Harbaugh.
I was wrong. Yeah.
I saw a freezing cold takes tweet about College Game Day saying somebody on College Game Day saying of Harbaugh when he was hired, quote, "I think he's going to be Urban Meyer's biggest nightmare." That is what somebody said about Jim Harbaugh.
He's not even Ryan Day's nightmare.
He lost by 35 points against that Wisconsin team.
But you see teams like Michigan and teams like Penn State. I know I'm identifying Big Ten schools, but there are good programs that aren't knowing exactly how to handle this weird season. So this year, more than ever, to point to like a one-score victory against a Virginia Tech and say, yeah, just get the win – this is one of those years that you can point to and say, that's a valid argument. I know it's the University of Miami. I know there's sky-high expectations. They seem to be building something. Again, though, it could all come crashing down when they lose a special quarterback who's the best quarterback we've seen at this program since Dorsey.
It can go crashing down before that when they lose an ACC game like they always seem to lose. The Michigan loss, do you believe that on the sidelines during that, as he's losing by 5 touchdowns to Wisconsin, Harbaugh's like scratching his head and saying, why was I in such a big hurry to make sure we played this season? Like, why did I force my conference to hurry up and get out here so that this could happen to me again and again as I'm a lead voice on we need to get out there? And so I can show everybody, man, my talent evaluation must stink because we're not 5 touchdowns within Wisconsin.
I think they play Rutgers this weekend, and it's only an 8-point spread. Michigan's only favored by 8. And 3 or 4 years ago, they beat Rutgers by 73 points. Like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, the talent's going in the other direction. You see them on the field with Wisconsin, and you're like, how is Michigan going to beat these guys? Because Wisconsin is so much more talented. That's not supposed to happen when you bring in Jim Harbaugh with his coaching pedigree and his ability to reach top end recruits. I don't think the pleated pants and the glasses and the look out of the 1950s is really connecting with kids, Dan.
Billy, have you heard from people? Has he been around anywhere? Because I would imagine that this is coming close to being a time where people might be getting ready to get loud. He was beaten into submission, but I haven't had any contact with him. Have you? Have you heard from him in any way?
Suspiciously quiet so far, but it seems like we may be ramping up to an appearance at some point because they do keep winning, barely winning, but they do keep winning, which means he's probably thinking that they have a shot at doing something that they probably don't actually have a shot at doing.
Well, what's the rest of their schedule look like here, Mike? Because it is kind of silly when you see the Pac-12 playing 6 games and it's going to be a real cluster bleep trying to sort out who deserves what. Because it wouldn't be fair at all, Stugatz, to reward somebody for playing 6 games when another team is playing 10.
Right.
But that's where we are in terms of the structural integrity of this sport being compromised.
3 more conference games, a primetime game at home against Georgia Tech. Miami should win that game. And
Georgia Tech is terrible.
Yeah, that's the easiest game left on their schedule. At Wake Forest, that could be a challenge. Wake Forest can put some points up against North Carolina, who's coming to town. And the thought was, as well, that would decide the Coastal Division, but this year in the ACC, there are no divisions, and you just so happen to have a Notre Dame team that's very, very good. So Miami might actually find themselves in this scenario where they can be the angry one-loss team that's shut out of the ACC championship game while not being very good, and the optics for Manny Diaz, who continues to recruit well, are very, very good. And he can say, look, allow me the ability to build. A one-loss regular season for the Miami Hurricanes is a dream scenario in terms of realistic scenarios for Manny Diaz. And credit to him, yes, they're barely winning these games, but those are games that 100% they lose last year against NC State and against Virginia Tech.
I'm surprised Peepo's waiting this long because they're 7-1. Usually Peepo does this at like 2-1. 3-1, 4-1. I mean, they're 7-1. I mean, this is a long time to wait.
Peepo and Cocky Canes fan got it all beaten out of them last year. Right. You wanted it, you had the new coach energy, but you lose to FIU. That's a come to Jesus moment. And I'm probably a little too hard on the Miami Hurricanes, but it all resorts back to that loss to FIU. That's a program changer, and that's a recalibration of expectations.
I know we're talking Canes right now, but you guys want to do some schedule. Looking at some schedules, the Dolphins' next 3 games, yeah. Broncos, Jets, Bengals. Chris, looking at a little 9-3.
Chris, you weren't listening when Stugatz said that, right? Yeah, you weren't listening at all when he said that. Like, you've been on fire this hour.
I have to make mistakes too. That's part of my bit. Like, I can't just be good. This has been a beautiful start to the week.
When are we getting to the good part?
You can't be good, yeah.
Yeah, but that pivot was fantastic. I mean, your lie's the best thing you've done so far this hour.
Like, what level of shame do you have right now kicking off this week, okay? I went to you and you had nothing. You had nothing on.
The funny thing is I don't really have shame about that one because I blame my wife because she was talking to me as you were talking to me. This last one, I just didn't hear Stugatz say that. So that one I actually feel more shame about, actually.
I find interesting, though, that this is fairly shocking, okay? I don't know if it's the most shocking thing about 2020, which has been a rough year, but I just heard and saw, and I can't remember this being exactly so, Mike Ryan and Chris Cody basically say of their teams, yeah, we got that one. We're going to win that one. That one's easy. We're going to win that one. And it's like, whoa, that's where we are with the Dolphins. We're making them 9-3 and we're taking the Hurricanes and we're having them finish everyone off.
I said we're going to beat Georgia Tech looking at that schedule. That's the only one I feel confident
in. Is Miami
in.
Better than North Carolina? What do you think? Do you think Miami? Obviously, North Carolina's offense is overwhelming.
Well, yeah, obviously, but you can lose to a team you're worse than in the ACC. If they finish the season with two losses, I'm still very happy with how the season and the upward trajectory and where we're going. I'm really worried about next year because I think we're seeing the difference between Miami now and the Miami teams of the last 15 years. Not much, but at that quarterback position, he's special. He's also a grown-ass man.
Right.
He doesn't look it physically, but maturity. This is a 25-year-old man with life experience going in there. It is night and day from what we were having here before. I cannot push this upon you guys enough. They had immature little boys at that position, and it showed with those losses.
Just give me the game that concerns you the most. It's not the Yellow Jackets. It's either the Deacs on the road or North Carolina at home.
Both of those. Both of those.
It's terrible.
Both of those concern me.
The Canes never sweated those games.
No.
No, we always sweat North Carolina. Since we've gotten in the ACC, North Carolina is always a nightmare matchup for Miami. I always sweat North Carolina.
All right.
You say always, but Stugatz is always reverting back to the time when Miami did not sweat teams like before being in the ACC. There was no sweating of North Carolina back then. Every once in a while, Arkansas or South Carolina would come into the Orange Bowl and like surprise you. You had to make a field goal or something.
I had a lot of ACC title hopes dashed at the hands of the Tar Heels. I do not take them lightly.
But you are doing the Butch Davis year. Years. You're doing.
I'm doing last year with Sam Howell hanging it up on them. Like they pretty much own Miami in this matchup. That's Miami's biggest non-traditional ACC rival since they gotten in. Those matchups are always heated up and they taunt us like crazy.
Why'd you guys stop at three games out? Looking at the Dolphins' schedule, you did Broncos, Jets, Bengals, but the big one, Chiefs. I mean, that's a measuring stick game, Dan. And I don't think that they're necessarily going to lose that game. And if you go against the Chiefs, you could be rolling in at 9-3, mm-hmm. and that's a who's game.
It is.
You see if the Dolphins are where everybody thinks they are. And I think that, you know what? That may get flexed. That game get flexed. I don't know how flexing works, but I think it may get flexed.
Mm-hmm. I'm flexing right now.
Yep. Flexing it.
The who they are game, what kind of game is this?
The measuring stick game,
who's
Dan.
Who?
One that tells us who's who.
Okay. Because I don't think, when you say, they are who everyone thinks they are as it regards Kansas City. I think what everyone thinks they are is not nearly as good as Kansas City.
Oh, no, I was talking about the Dolphins. Everybody's talking Dolphins here like three. That's what I've been
hearing.
We know who Kansas City is. We're trying to figure out who the Dolphins are.
I know, but I don't think there are many people listening to this right now that put the Dolphins in the class with Kansas City.
Well, they should. And here's the other thing. Are. Yeah, they should. I mean, have they watched the Dolphins the last couple of five straight, by the way, I remind you. But
thank you for that reminder.
The Chiefs, speaking of schedules, and I'm so glad we're here, the Chiefs are at the Raiders, at the Buccaneers, and then they're home with the Broncos. So there's a chance this game has major, major seeding implications. Seriously, Dolphins, Chiefs, who's who?
Hot seat for Andy Reid.
Mike, why don't you describe to the audience what Stugatz does when he says who's who and like how he like settles into his chair.
Well,
like there's a good amount of
respond.
Just shut up for a second.
He backs away. He backs away. He flapped his sausage fingers in front of his microphone like he smelled something bad.
Yes.
All his fingers, the same exact length as the other.
Yeah.
And sits back in deep appreciation out of him just playing a hit.
Of himself.
And not
though,
a good
right?
one.
A great one, pointing out the Chiefs' schedule. You don't think they're good until they become good, until the Chiefs lose a couple of games. Oh, Stugatz was right. There it is.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs are good.
Stugatz, I think we all know the Chiefs are good. What are you doing?
I'm just making the point that it appears there's a big gulf between these two teams right now because one is 8-1, the other 6-3, the other's coming off a Super Bowl and might have the greatest quarterback we've ever seen.
Those are important variables.
I'm just pointing out by the time we get to that game, okay, the Chiefs might have added a loss or two to their record. That's all I'm pointing out.
Only one of those two teams won five in a row this season. Not the Chiefs.
Can the Chiefs-Dolphins game be a who's who game if we already know who the Chiefs are?
That's just a who's game then.
Yeah.
That's the part that I was confused why Stugatz was so proud of himself with the sausage.
He has a lot of unanswered questions about the Kansas City Chiefs.
I know who the Chiefs were a year ago. I'm still not certain who the Chiefs are. They're a team that lost at home to the Raiders. I mean, I don't know who they are this year. I'm sorry.
A lot of good teams lose at home to the Raiders. Careful.
That's a good point.
I really don't understand why you were so swaggering and proud of yourself.
It was a weird thing to do.
But explain to me. I want the audience, which can't see you, I want the audience to sort of absorb. You guys saw what he did, right? He backs away from the microphone. It's not just what Mike says, where he wiggles his sausage fingers in front of his face like he smelled something bad, but it's also sort of dismissing me. Like with his fingers, like he's wiggling his fingers at me in a way that suggests like, take that smell and do something with it, Dan. I dare you. I'm just going to sit over here and be great.
He's like all palms too. The hands, when he waves them, it gives the illusion that his hands are webbed.
Yeah. Weird hands.
But why did that point summon that? Because you do back up in your chair and it's like, God, I've said what needs to be said there. I don't even need to be near the microphone because the microphone's on fire from how smart and great I was there.
When you dissect a game and a story and a future game, you have to look at it from all angles. And what was being left out there was the Chiefs portion of the schedule and what they could potentially be once we get to this who's who game. And I was proud of myself for bringing out the Chiefs schedule and how difficult it is because Raiders at Raiders in Las Vegas and at Tampa Bay, those are two very difficult games and games I can see the Chiefs losing. Why? Because I don't know who they are. That's all.
Not just the three games headed into that game against the Dolphins, Stugatz. Look back at the Chiefs schedule. Who have they beat? We're looking at the teams that they played. The Ravens, okay, that's a good win. Yeah. But outside of that, Texans, Chargers, Patriots, Bills, Broncos, Jets. I mean, who have they beat?
Right.
It's not like they've been going up against these great teams to amass that 8-1 record. We don't really know who these Chiefs are.
I know. I mean, the Patriots beat the Ravens. I mean,
guys, they're the defending champions with the best quarterback any of us have. Okay, very good.
We'll see.
The Patriots beat the Dolphins. What? You're like, this is a transitive property riddle, what you got going on right now.
That was a different Patriots team and a different Dolphins team.
Yeah.
Well, football does this to people, but I believe that Stugatz's every Chiefs opinion should be rendered moot, totally moot by this.
Oh, shit. Go ahead, Andy Reid. I dare you to go 14-2 and allow Alex Smith to leave Arrowhead Stadium, to leave Kansas City. Go ahead. I dare you. Because of Patrick Mahomes. Because you think you could turn Patrick Mahomes into something that Alex Smith is not. Alex Smith is a very good quarterback. The audacity. First off, to do this to Alex Smith, who's been very good and loyal to Andy Reid and won him a lot of football games, to dangle Patrick Mahomes out there because Andy Reid thinks he's some sort of quarterback whisperer, which he is not, by the way. He is not, because if he was, Alex Smith would be better than he's been the last few years. So I dare.
That's a record for contradiction.
It's on Andy Reid.
The only reason Alex Smith is not better than Andy Reid. That sets a world record for Stugatz not paying attention to any of the things he said the sentence before. Was the leading passer in football yesterday Alex Smith?
390 yards.
Did he have more yards than anyone in the sport yesterday? The Lions were Lions in that game.
He did it on 38 completions. I mean,
yeah, he threw 55
Can you imagine
times.
If Mahomes had 38 completions in a game?
Threw 55 times, 50 of them, that underneath the route that the Lions apparently couldn't figure out.
I would be so
I started Lions defense in fantasy, if you can't
tell. Miserable if I were a Lions fan. Like, how can you be up 24-3 against Washington's third quarterback? And they come roaring back. Alex Smith is a surgical success story. Alex Smith, more than a football or a will story, is a medicine story. Like, he is a story about the marvels of modern medicine. How the hell do you cough up a 3-touchdown lead to the Washington football team?
I mean, you're the Lions. It's not like it's the Packers.
But can you keep rooting for that team, though? Like, how, if you're a fan of that team and you make your best players quit, plural, Barry Sanders, that's plural.
Yeah.
It's Calvin Johnson. They're I don't know what I would do if I were a Lions fan. I'd quit football. I'd quit the idea of watching football on Sunday.
Kalen Collar from Bleacher Report did an awesome story about the Patriot way going wrong and how Matt Patricia tries to bring over Patriots culture to Detroit and how all his players hated him. In fact, one player's agent sent over champagne, and during the last day of team meetings of that season, they went to the cafeteria, got orange juice, and started toasting mimosas in the locker room because they were so happy to be done with Matt Patricia.
But Dan, I mean, the Dolphins, you've remained, I mean, you're not a fan really, but you're loyal to the Dolphins. You want the local teams to do well. They've had a couple of decades
But no, Stugatz, it's not merely losing. I'm talking about just what losers you are. Like that you even won yesterday and I'm still looking at you like, what's the matter with you guys? Like you won and I'm like, you guys just keep stinking. You're a plague of disease on your fan base.
They're right in the mix though at NFC North. And so are the Redskins.
I know. Washington football team.
Damn!